And let me tell you what this all relates to. The more you stack emotions, the more powerful you're going to feel. Let's invest it on a daily basis, and I'll tell you how you do that. By understanding two things. Number one, understanding what you're really after. Now, I'm not going to take a lot of time with this. I'm just going to give you the big picture because I teach this in Personal Power and in the 10-Day Emotional Fitness Program. But there are six needs that you have that you've got to meet. The number one need is a need for certainty. Certainty you can feel good. Certainty that you can avoid pain and that you can have some pleasure. We need a basic level of stability. We need a certain amount of certainty in our life to survive. But see, God has a sense of humor. Because what most of us do is we work hard to get that certainty. We work really hard. Now, how do you get that certainty? Depends on the way you were brought up, the environment you're in, your beliefs, your rules, the country you come from, the culture you come from. Some people think the way to get certainty is control everything and everyone now. Some people do it just by faith. You know, they trust in God. And they say, you know what? I'm guided. And that's how they get certainty. Some people get certainty by eating. They're certain if they eat. If all heck's breaking loose and they're stressed, eat. I can feel comfortable. We all have ways to do it. Some ways are positive. Some ways are destructive. Some ways are neutral. The point is, whatever you want in life, it's trying to meet one or more of these six needs. But the way you go about trying to get them, though, will determine whether you end up being really fulfilled long term or just feeling okay. So here's the deal, though. Let's say you get that certainty. Let's say in a relationship, for example, you have absolute certainty. You know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, what they're going to say, when they're going to say it. For a while, that feels good. But after a while, when you're totally certain you can predict everything, you get bored, don't you? And you go, man, I'm meeting my need and now I'm not happy. That's because God has a sense of humor. God gave you another need. It's called uncertainty. He wanted to see what you would do with that, with having two needs that seem to be totally in conflict. See, think about that. We have a need for uncertainty, right? Don't you? Don't you have a need for variety, for surprise, for challenge, for things you're not ready for because they make you grow, they excite you, they stimulate your nervous system? We all want that. Sometimes things are going so well, people screw things up just to have a little challenge in their life. Relationships going really well, and then they say something that messes it up and sparks out a little fight. They go, this is getting too predictable. People are weird. We go to movies where we get ourselves scared to death. We go on roller coasters. Why? Why would we do this silly stuff? Why would we pay for that? We want a little variety. We want to feel different. It's why people do drugs. It's why they do alcohol. They want to change the way they feel. They want to stimulate themselves. But you know what? You can do it in positive ways. You can get that same variety from learning, from growing, from challenge. You can take on something new that just pushes you to the edge. You can do something physical. There's so many good ways. There's neutral ways and there's negative ways. Which ways are you using? Which vehicles for fulfillment are you using? That's for you to take a look at. What's the third need? Well, the third need is we all have a need for significance, a need to feel important, a need to feel unique, to feel like our life in some way is special. Everybody has it. Some people try to get that by saying, oh, I'm not like everybody else. I don't have to do those things that everybody else does. Some people do it by basically quitting. Some people do it by overachieving. I am the best. No one will ever beat me. I am number one. Some people do it by giving more than anyone else gives. Some people do it through violence. Stick a gun to somebody's head. You don't even know them. Suddenly, you're significant. Didn't take an education. Didn't take a background. Didn't take anything. The point is, how are you going to do it? How are you going to get that significance? How are you going to feel important? How are you going to feel like your life has meaning? That's an important question because the answer to how you're going about doing it right now is shaping your destiny. And by the way, to be significant, you got to be totally unique. So that's in conflict with the fourth human need, the need for connection and love. We all ultimately want that deep feeling of love. We're afraid we're not going to get it. So most of us go, well, I'll be significant and you'll have to love me. I'll have to achieve something, make something happen. But we really want love. We want that deep connection. You can get it negatively, get sick, and you get sympathy, right? Maybe some love. Some people make that connection just by spirituality, by connecting with God, or by connecting with an animal, or walking through nature. Haven't you had that experience just walking in nature and feeling connected to yourself, to your creator, to life? Isn't it an awesome feeling? And there's no downside to that. Some people do it through their intimate love of another. Some people do it through their love of their family. There's so many ways to meet these needs. Again, are you doing it positively, neutrally, or negatively? Because everybody finds a way to meet their needs. But to be deeply fulfilled, truly fulfilled as a human being, to be happy, to feel joy, to feel passion, to have a lasting value for your life, you must meet the two final needs. They're called the primary needs. And that is the need to grow and the need to contribute beyond yourself. Ultimately, what we get will never make us happy. who we become as people makes us very happy or very sad. Remember that. That's where all the juice is. And if you're going to have an extraordinary quality of life, if you're going to really have the time of your life, you got to grow. But most of us don't want to do that because growing requires facing our fears, taking on a certain amount of uncertainty, doesn't it? Pushing through. We may not look very unique, very significant. When you first do something new, you're not very good at it. So most people kind of hang on to what they got. You don't want to do that because then you stop growing and you start to die. My point is you've got six needs, and my question is, how are you trying to meet them right now? Are you really growing? Are you pushing yourself, and are you contributing beyond yourself in ways that maybe you're not being rewarded on the surface? Because that's where the juice is. I mean, ultimately in life, the secret to living is giving. Because the moment you give love, that's when you feel that love. Whether somebody returns it or not doesn't matter. To be able to give that love, you have to feel it inside of yourself first. The moment you give someone a great idea, a sense of caring, a sense of love, a sense of passion, anytime you put something out beyond yourself that you don't need to do, you're not doing it to get something, you're doing it to give, there's a level of fulfillment that no achievement on earth can come close to. No amount of money, no amount of fame, fortune, or any of the things that society tries to sell us on. That someday when, then you'll be happy. Someday when you have enough money. Someday when you have the right person in your life. Someday when you have the right job. Someday when you retire. Someday when you finally have kids. Someday never comes. You don't want to buy into that theory. You want to give right now. You want to be fully alive. Let me tell you what OPA is about. This is about creating a plan for your life where you create an extraordinary quality of life, a life of real, lasting fulfillment, a life with certainty that comes from the fact that you know you've begun to master your life. You've got this planning system, and no matter what happens, no matter how much somebody throws at you, you know you can capture it, and you can take that vision and turn it in reality. How certain would that make you feel? And you know what? How much variety can you have in your life when you got a well-rounded wheel? When you know the areas of your life you're after and you're willing to be playful and you're not stuck with a stupid to-do list, but now you're in a place where you're focused on your outcomes and you know why you're doing it and you can change in a moment. How much more variety, how much more playfulness, how much more spontaneity comes from that, and yet there's still a direction to that spontaneity. You know what you want. It's what you want, not what somebody else wants. Living life on your terms. And when you live life on your terms, what's your sense of uniqueness, of significance? When you know you're not just coasting along with the river, hoping that when the fork comes, you'll make the right choice, that you've consciously decided what you want in your life. And some of the decisions won't be great, but you'll learn from them. How significant will you feel? How unique will you feel to know that, hey, I ask myself the questions that give me a quality life. I know how to master these things. I'm learning. I'm getting that skill. So now you start feeling like you have some time because you're spending more time in the zone, remember? Doing things that are important but not urgent, like picking up that card and writing a little note on the way home. Sending it to that person or giving it to them for no good reason. Remember what that feels like to that person. What does it feel like to you? Now, what if you actually took the time to just give? What if you said, you know what? I'm going to make myself have more time. I'm going to commit an hour a week, and I'm going to mentor a young child. If you have your own kids, maybe you ought to start by mentoring them. But if you don't, what about going and having a lunch buddy? And all you do for this child is something really simple. What does it take to be a mentor? You don't have to be a genius. You don't have to have all the answers. You're not supposed to. All you have to do is care and be willing to be there once a week for an hour and be honest and be human. And that person now has a friend. That's all they're looking for, somebody to talk to. So many kids need that right now. We're living in a society where kids have more choices than any time in human history, and they have the least amount of direction. What if you gave that time? How much would that give back to you? Or what if on the way home tomorrow you took the time to stop and you said, I have time. I'm not going to sit in traffic. And you pull over and you take the yellow pages and you look up an old folks home, a convalescent hospital. And you drive there and you meet the nurse. And you walk up and you say, hey, you know, I'm not a weirdo. I'm just a caring soul. And I got an hour and I'd love to talk to somebody who's a lonely soul, somebody who doesn't have any family or any friends, or maybe somebody has family or friends, but they never stop off to spend any time with them. And when you walk in, meet that person, greet them like you've known them for years. Charlie! That'll freak them out. Then they'll know they've lost their memory. And then just hang out with the person and talk to them and polish up their memories. Maybe you do a little emotional flood. Say, tell me about some of the greatest memories of your life. And you get their flood. What do you think it would mean to a lonely soul to have a total stranger just take a little bit of time, come by and visit even once, just to say hi? What would it do to you? What would it do to you to just give without an agenda? There are certain moments in life that you won't forget. I think what this system is all about, what my life planning is about, the reason I took you through these 10 days, is to get you to pack more of those magic moments into your life, more of those moments, to stop and maybe notice them and go, hey, this is a magic moment, stop and celebrate it. Instead of letting the time go by and being pressured about all the things you still need to do. You're not a human doing, you're a human being. So decide, how are you going to play this game called life? How are you going to show up each day? What states are you going to be in? Because, you know, ultimately, that's the most important list you're ever going to make. Is maybe what it is you got this vision for your life, you have this sense of purpose, but whether you really achieve it will be what states do you live in on a daily basis? You know, do you live in frustration and overwhelm and anger? You got a choice. You can replace those with certainty, with focus, with creativity, with passion. But you got to make that a standard, because unless you make feeling good a must, gravity's automatic. And I'll tell you what make it feel good. Go give. Grow and give. You work on those two. The others will take care of themselves. You create a great life plan, which includes contribution as one of your categories, or being a community leader, or being a mentor, or just taking a little time, maybe once a month. You don't have to be Mother Teresa to do something good. I mean, you ever done something where after you did it, you didn't tell anybody you did it, and you just did it because it was right? How does that feel? I'll tell you what, for me, there's nothing greater. And I tell you this because I'm able to talk to you right now, because years ago, somebody did some incredible things for my family, some people I don't even know. When there was no food in my family, somebody delivered some there. And delivered it through a stranger. We don't know who sent it, a time when we really needed it. And it made me believe in people and in life. It made me have the desire to give back. So I want you right now to decide how you're going to play the game. And the way to do that is create a code of conduct. It's real simple. Decide. What are the emotional states you're going to be in every day? Think of your vision, your categories. Think about some of the goals you have. And then ask yourself, what state of mind, what state of emotion would I have to be on a regular basis for me to achieve all this? What kind of person would it take to achieve all that I want? You know, a loving person, a playful person, a fun person, a crazy person, an outrageous person, a driven person. What kind of person would you need to be? That's what this is all about in the end. Because in the end, you're not going to take any of this stuff with you. You're going to take who you become. That's what you're going to feel today. That's what's going to make you feel that pride or that joy or that happiness or that sadness. So I'll tell you, I didn't get this for years. Early in my career, man, I was out there being a human doing, man. I was doing everything I could possibly do. And I had my mission statement. I had a bunch of visions and values. And by most people's standards, I was doing unbelievably well. But I was also stressed because I had so many to-do lists. The more success I had, the more to-dos I had. And I also wanted to please everybody all the time because I wanted love. So I remember one time a man called up and he wanted me to come in and do a seminar in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I didn't want to go to Milwaukee, quite honestly, nothing against Milwaukee, but I thought, man, I don't want to go to a cold place in the middle of the winter. My schedule's already booked. But he said, oh, please, it would make such a difference. And I went, okay, I agreed to do it because I wanted to make him happy. Ever done that? You ever made a promise and then later on wished you hadn't? Well, sure enough, about 3 or 4 months later, I got to pay off on this commitment. I got to show up in Milwaukee. And about 2 weeks before my seminar, this is early in my career, this man calls up and he says, you know, I need your help. I said, well, I'm coming to do the seminar. He said, well, I'm wondering if you might stop by. I said, stop by? You know, in between your trips across the country, just stop here in Milwaukee and maybe do, you know, like a free guest event. So, because he said, you've never been to Milwaukee and no one knows who you are. I looked at my calendar and I had no space in my calendar. So between 3 jam cities, I said, all right, I'll come in on this day and I'll do a guest event that night and I'll charge nothing for it and I'll do a bunch of demonstrations and I'll show people how they can wipe out their phobia in 10 or 15 minutes or an hour. And we'll do a bunch of things that will just knock their socks off and that'll enroll them in coming to spend the 3 days with me in the seminar. So he said, oh, they're greatest. Thank you. And I said, okay, great. So I forget about it. Now I've been on the road for probably 5 or 6 weeks. And I'm stressed, and I'm burnt, and I get a phone call. Same guy! He says, listen, Tony, you know, you're coming to Milwaukee anyway to do this guest event. Do you think early in the day you might be willing to do a couple radio shows to kind of help promote the guest event? I said, oh, all right, fine. And I agreed. I didn't want to agree, but I agreed. I felt like I had no choice. So sure enough, finally, I got to go pay off on this debt. I got to show up for this guest event and do a little bit of media. So I remember I was supposed to arrive in Milwaukee, I think around 10 o'clock at night, and I got there at 2 a.m. And I was stressed. And so I get to the hotel, and he's booked me in an amazing hotel. What makes it not so nice is that the place has not been kept up. And when you walk in, the man who owns it is obviously a hunter. Now, I'm a vegetarian. I walk in, and there are 8 million animals stacked on the wall everywhere. There's like a tiger there greeting you as you come in, all stuffed. I go up to the front desk. There's Bambi staring at me. And I'm going, oh, poor baby, you know, and I'm going to try and check in. But this time, maybe it's 2:30 in the morning. And the place smells like it's mildewing. All these dead animals are mildewing in there. I mean, the whole carpet is mildewing. It's horrible. And I'm thinking, what am I doing here? And I go in, and sure enough, as I get in, I try and check in, and the guy's trying to figure out where I am, and he finally gets, he goes, oh, you have the presidential suite. I thought, wow, cool. So I get on the elevator, and there's only 4 floors to this place. And the elevator crawls. And now I'm about floor number 1. And does that to get up to the 4th floor. I go down the hall. I'm totally beat. I'm exhausted. I don't want to be in this place. I open the door to the, quote, presidential suite, and it has orange shag carpeting. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And the walls have kind of got that orangish color to it. And it was, oh, and it stunk. And I thought, this is horrible. And as I open the door and look down the shag carpeting, there are 6 messages sitting there on the floor. They've been pushed under the door. I open each one, and each one is another call from my local promoter. He's here to let me know, one after another, that he's booked another radio show and another one and another one. And then finally, as I go through, I piece them together and realize that it's now 2:45 a.m., and I have my first show at 7 a.m. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding. And I get mad. Like, how can he do this? I got to fill this whole thing, and I got to do this, and I got to do all these things. And then I start looking at all the shows he's booked. He's got me booked all day long, and he has a book signing for me at the local mall in the middle of the day, and then I got to do a seminar that night. And I thought, where am I supposed to breathe here? Plus, I thought, you know what's going to happen? He's booked me in competing shows at the same time frames. These people are going to be mad. They're going to think I'm walking in as Hollywood Tony, you know, coming from California. I've had this happen once before, and they're all going to be mad at me. So now I'm all stirred up, and I got to go to sleep right away. And I can't sleep. I probably fall asleep around 3:30. Sure enough, I got to be on the air by 7. So I got to be up at 5:45 so I can get cleaned up, dressed, and get out of there. So sure enough, I get, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours sleep. I wake up, I'm dragging, I go downstairs. This guy is so happy to see me. I am not happy to see him. And I don't have any list of code of conduct at this point in my life. I don't have a set of emotional states I've committed to be in no matter what, even if it rains on your parade. So sure enough, I am not a happy camper. And I say, look, you know, this is really unfair. People are going to be upset with me. I really wish you'd thought this through. And I get this frustration in my voice. He goes, gosh, I'm sorry. I just thought I succeeded. I got you on all these radio shows. So sure enough, I go to the first radio show. And it goes well. But when I go to the second radio show, which is about 7:45, as soon as I walk in, it's the competing station. And the guy says, who do you think you are? And he does the whole thing I expected. Did you ever notice how when you expect things, they tend to happen? Sure enough, he's all mad and he's in my face. And normally I would have placated the guy, you know, and said, hey, listen, I don't mean it. It's not my fault. But this time I didn't care. I was mad and I was really immature and I was really young. And I turned to him and I said, look, if you don't want me on, just say so. He said, I don't want you on. I said, fine. And I left. Really immature. I'd never done that. I felt terrible about it, but I was also mad. So the guy had dumped me off because he went to go take care of some things. And I got this limousine. I don't know where to go. And now I got a half hour to kill. So I turned to the limousine driver and I said, where do you go around here if you want to, like, see something pretty? Is there anything like that around here? And I'm being real gentle and warm. He said, well, I could take you to the park. I said, fine, take me there. And he's driving along. I'm not being nice to this guy. I'm not being warm. I'm Mr., you know, make it happen, Mr. make a difference in the world. I'm waiting for my seminar to get up and do that kind of stuff, and I'm being a jerk off the air. I mean, that's not how I want to live my life. And I realized that. I felt rotten inside, but I was frustrated. I didn't know where to go. You know, I got this mission statement. Well, maybe I ought to read it. I read it and thought about what my life is about, and I thought, ah, this isn't working. I need something else. I need some other change for my life. And whenever I travel, I always take books with me because I'm an avid reader. I believe, you know, every day you want to read. Read something instructive, something that feeds your mind, your emotions. Miss a meal, but don't miss reading. My original mentor, Jim Rohn, taught me that. He said, read 30 minutes a day no matter what. Feed your mind. So I always carry a book with me because you get delayed, and I read the book. So I've been to a used bookstore, and I picked up this old, tattered version of Benjamin Franklin's autobiography. And so I'm scanning through it, you know, sitting in the car. I got a half hour before my next radio show, and I'm going through it, whipping through it. And as I'm doing, I see a phrase that catches my attention. It says something like, I don't remember the exact phrase, but something like, the greatest achievement of my life. So I stop and I read the passage. And it seems that old Ben, when he was 26 years old, he had the world by the tail. I mean, he was a major player in the new world and doing quite well, I might say. But what he realized is there was something missing from his life. And he thought he needed something more than just to achieve things. He needed to become someone unique. And so he decided the way to do that was to create for himself a list of virtues that he was going to live by. But Ben was a great guy because he didn't want to just write some list down. He understood something. You can't get results unless you measure something. You can't manage what you don't measure. So he created a system for managing himself. He came up with first, if I remember correctly, 12 emotional states, 12 virtues that he was going to live by every day, no matter what happened. That was going to be his standard for himself. Even if things didn't go his way, he was going to be this way. A list of ways of being, like a set of goals of how he's going to be no matter what happened. And I thought that was a really interesting concept. So I thought, wow, you know what I need? I need what I would call a code of conduct. I need a set of emotional states that I am going to demand for myself that I'm going to be in every day, even if it rains on my parade, even if somebody books 15 radio shows, even if somebody treats me mean, I'm still going to be this way because that's the one thing I can control. I can't control a promoter. I can't control the weather. I can't control how other people are going to respond to me, but I can control one thing, the state that I'm going to be in every single day. Because I control that by what I focus on, by what I say to myself, by the way I breathe, by the way I move, just by deciding I can feel any feeling I want because I'm the one in charge here. That's what I got control of. So sure enough, I said, okay, well, I need a list of states I'm going to be in every day. So I said, I need a set of being goals, but not goals. That needs to be standards for me that I'm going to do every day no matter what. So I said, what are those? And I thought, how would I be when I'm being my best? You know, when I'm being Tony, I mean, the real guy, me, at my very best inside, when I'm just being me really, and not fancy things, just little things. I said, well, I'm really being nice. I'm a nice person. And you know what? One of my goals was to really make a difference in the world. But you know, one of the ways you make a difference in the world is be nice to people. It's the littlest things, the littlest acts of kindness that sometimes totally change people's lives. It's just saying hello. It's smiling. It's stopping to a stranger and talking to them for a few minutes. It's caring. It's stepping out of the urgent world of nanoseconds that are demanding your attention every single moment, doing so many things on your to-do list and being human. And so I ended up with a list that said, be fun, be playful, be loving, be nice, be grateful, be focused, be flexible, be passionate, be disciplined, be strong, be healthy, be smart, be romantic, be cheerful, happy, and joy-filled. Be an example of all the good that's possible in people's lives. And so I started writing. I wrote that list, and I wrote it again and again. I thought, okay, let me come up with a list I'm going to commit to every single day, no matter what. Like, if I haven't been that way, at the end of the day, I'm going to ask myself, have I been this way today? And if there's anyone I've missed, I'm going to go do something to be that way. I'll call somebody and be outrageous. I'll do something that's really bold right then and there. And I got excited about the idea. And I said, okay, and I came up with my original list. And I've changed my list many times because I want to have variety, right? So I came up with my list, and I got excited. I thought, this is how I'm going to be today no matter what happens. Even if it rains on my parade, even if people are mean to me, doesn't matter. And you know what? All of a sudden, I look forward to the next interview. And the last interview, I was like, when someone asked me a question, I thought, if I hear that question one more time, and then I went to this interview, and I was being playful and warm, and somebody asked me the question, and I was being curious, and I'd say, well, I'm curious, why are you asking me that question? And I learned stuff, and I had fun, and I was playful. I went on a country western station, all of a sudden I had a twang in my voice because I'd been playful. And I went on PBS station, and suddenly I was very intellectual. I mean, I just had the greatest time. Every station, one after another after another. And my day went from totally a pain to totally transformed because of one thing. I developed a new outcome, didn't I? I developed an outcome for how I was going to be every day. And I knew why I wanted it, because this is who I am really. When I'm not caught up in all the bull of the world, all the old patterns and all the stresses, this is who I am at my core. So why be anything else but who you really are? And so I was feeling pretty darn good. I was having a great time. And miraculously, for some reason, no one else was upset with me. The first guy I went to was upset. He acted upset. And I looked at him and I said, listen, I totally understand your frustration. And if you don't want me on, it's totally okay with me. I just have this promoter that's overzealous. He's a brand new guy. But if you put me on, I promise you, we'll have a good time. And your people will too. Come on, let's just do it. And I got all playful and fun and warm and passionate. And he started laughing. He said, all right, you're crazy. Let's do it. And that was the only one that gave me any upset. The rest of the day, I was in such a great state. People wanted to hang out with me. So now I'm feeling like I got the greatest day of my life. And I'm looking around and I'm loving the freezing cold. I'm loving the snow. I mean, I can feel I'm alive. I want to walk outside. I mean, it's the greatest day. And then I go to the mall for my book signing. Now, this is when I came out with my very first book, Unlimited Power. And again, I didn't have any TV shows. I didn't have any infomercials, nothing like that. So I'm 24 years old, just turning 25. And I got this first book signing. And by the way, it's the first one that anybody booked for me. There was probably a reason for that because nobody knew who I was. And so I go to this mall in Milwaukee. I don't remember the name of it, but if you're from Milwaukee, I'm sure you know. It's the one that's got like this three-story high centerpiece part of this mall. I mean, huge, where it looks like you're looking up into the stars. And I'm walking through this place, and as I get to the biggest part of the mall with a big open area, three stories high, I see this giant throne sitting there. You know, kind of like Santa goes on, and then there's all these stanchions going back and forth, like 5,000 people are going to come to visit. And then there's a picture of little old me with a copy of my book underneath it, Unlimited Power, and then another table stacked with books, like armies are going to come to see me. And I'm thinking, oh boy, I sure hope somebody shows up for this thing. So I'm a little early, so I go to the bookstore that's sponsoring it. I don't think it was B. Dalton or somebody like that. And I walk into that little mall bookstore, and I walk up to the counter and I say, hi, I'm Anthony Robbins. And the person just stares at me like, who's that? And I said, I'm the author of the book for the book signing today. And all of a sudden I see this person stop and go into like stark fear. And in that moment, I know that there is a problem. She said, Mr. Robbins, let me get the manager for you. And the manager comes out and he's a young man. And he's, oh, Mr. Robbins, shakes my hand. And he's like, oh, I'm so glad you're here. You know, I read your book. It's fantastic. And he said, I guess you didn't hear it, did you? And I said, hear what? He said, I guess you didn't hear about what happened with the advertisement about your signing. He said, the ad comes out tomorrow. We screwed up. And he said, it's not there. And he said, I'm so sorry. I say, listen, it's okay. Because I thought, hey, I've been friendly all day. I got to stay friendly here, too. I said, look, I'll sign a couple books for you, but I can't stay for tomorrow. I'm flying out tonight. He said, oh, no. He said, I want you to still go up there and sign the books. He said, people just see them. They'll just come up and that'll help us sell books and stuff. I said, you know what? I really don't think so. Nobody knows who I am. If I stand up there, I'm going to be sitting by myself like Santa. He said, no. I mean, really, people recognize you. You know, I've seen you on the news once before and other people see you. And I said, no. He said, but please, Mr. Robbins. He said, I'm the one that screwed up. And he said, it'll make a big difference. If I don't sell these books, I'm going to be in big trouble. And I thought, oh, my gosh, heartstrings, right? So I said, I'll tell you what, be nice, be warm, be flexible, be loving, right? Be focused. All right, here we go. So I said, all right, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm not sitting up in that silly chair, but what I'll do is I'll go out there and I'll sign a bunch of books and I'll be clearly present. And if people come up, I'll be happy to sign books for them and I'll do that. He said, oh, thank you so much. So now I make the long walk to the center of the mall, right? I look up at this big throne, all these books. It's now 2:00, which is the time of, you know, the signing. And there isn't a single soul waiting in line. Not a single person. So I'm like, oh, my God. So I picked up a book, and I started signing a couple of them. And I thought, yeah, I got to do something else. Nobody's here. Be playful. What could you do? Be outrageous. Have some fun. All right. So I picked up a book, and I pretended I was on Wheel of Fortune. And I started making bizarre noises like, huh. Oh, my God. Oh. I start making these noises like a total idiot, right? But I'm exaggerating it. And sure enough, people are walking by and they hear me go, huh? And I'm looking at it, going, huh? And I'm making these gestures as I'm reading the book and I'm turning the page. Whoa! And so sure enough, pretty soon I got two or three people. They come over to look at me and then they pick up the book and they start reading through it. And they start, you know, oh yeah, this is interesting. And they start talking. And pretty soon I got three or four people and this one woman, I go, whoa. And I look at her and she looks at me and she goes, she says, is this author coming? And I said, I guess so. And I said, do you know anything about him? And she said, no. I said, oh, my God, he's amazing. I said, you know, you should read his book. He's an amazing man. I mean, he turns around people's phobias, and he's helped sports teams, and he does this, and he does that. And I start telling her all these incredible stories about this guy, Tony Robbins, right? Anthony Robbins, the guy in the book. And she said, really? And she said, I wonder if he could help me with my insomnia. I said, oh, no question about it. And I start talking about how he would do that. No, 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 no. She goes, wow, that's amazing. And as we're talking, she starts talking to a friend and people come around. And pretty soon we got maybe 10 or 12 people gather around. We're all talking about this author and how incredible he is and everything else. Gradually, it takes about 15 minutes. We got about 20 people there, right? Maybe 25 max. I don't know exactly how many because there's people around it. And then pretty soon they start dwindling because it's now about 2:15. He hasn't shown up. And that's the crowd, man. That's it, 25 people. So I realized I was losing my audience, and people are talking, yeah, he's supposed to be here. I guess he's not here. Maybe he's going, oh, I don't know. Who is he? I don't know. And they start to break off. So I'm losing momentum. So I say to the woman next to me, I said, you know the best thing about this guy? She said, what? I said, he is so handsome. She said, really? I said, yeah, look at the picture inside the book. She opens the book. She sees this black and white picture of me. She looks at it, and she goes, oh, he is handsome. But she doesn't say squat to me. She doesn't make the connection. I'm thinking there, who am I, chopped liver? So and she goes, he's handsome. I said, you see those high cheekbones he's got? And she goes, yeah, he's a very handsome man. I said, do we notice anything unique about him? And she still doesn't get it. So finally I pick up a book, and I said, you notice anything unique about him? I put the picture next to my own face. She goes, oh, I can't believe it. It's him. It's him. And they all start laughing. And all of a sudden, we had the greatest time. And I signed all these books. And all these people were giggling with me, and I just had the greatest time because I was being me. You know, and they say, hey, go sit up in your chair up there. I go, I ain't sitting in that throne. Forget it. Right? Oh, no, come on, come on. And they tease me, so I went up, sat in the throne, right? And I start signing books, and I got this little dwindling crowd of 10 or 12 people. And then right at the I'm having a good time. Do you follow me? I'm being myself. I'm living by my code of conduct. It's giving me joy. I'm remembering what's my ultimate outcome is to enjoy my life, to care about people, to connect, to give. You know, to be the real me. And so then all of a sudden what happens is this woman walks up and she's one of the last people there and she's kind of hovering a little bit. And she said, can you tell me something about the book? And I said, what's your name? And she told me and I started signing a book for her. She said, oh, no, no, no. She said, I'm not going to get it right now. I said, yes, you are. This is a gift from me. And I signed the book and I handed it to her and she burst out into tears. And I said, hey, it's okay. It's just a little book. You know, it's not a big deal. Because I could tell she obviously couldn't afford it. And she said, oh, my God, I swear I'll read it. I swear I'll apply this. She said, my husband left me, and I have these four kids. And she started crying. She opened her wallet, and she showed me all her kids. And she was so emotional. And then her little boy came up. And I said, hey, how's it going? And I picked him up, put him in my lap like I was Santa, you know. I started talking to him. And we had this great conversation. And I really just comforted her. I said, you know what? You got to come to my seminar tonight. Because I'm going to show you some things that right away. I mean, the book's great. You got to come to the seminar. You come as my guest tonight. I said, it's a free seminar anyway. But when I come back, you come to the three-day seminar as my guest. And then she cried again. I said, no, don't cry. It'll be great. It'll be wonderful. And, you know, and then what happened was she left, and then I started to cry. And the reason I started to cry is because I realized that I was so busy doing all this stuff to change the world and trying to accomplish everything and be the perfect guy on stage who could help everybody, that I'd lost a part of myself up until that day. I'd forgotten what my life was really about. I was so into all the to-dos. I wasn't being. And in that moment, as I started to cry, I just thought, thank you, God. This is what I'm about. This is who I am. And I've never lost that feeling since that day. And if you've ever lost that feeling, I hope you get it back right now. Reach inside and think about, what are you really about? That's what I spent these 10 days with you about, is to give you the tools so that you can spend more time with you, being you. You at your best. You when your heart's open. You when you're being fun. And I left there and I was just so emotionally moved, and the guy was so grateful, and got in the car and the limousine, and the limo driver and I are like best buds. I'm instead of sitting way in the back, I'm sitting up front with him. I said, come on, let's go, James. And we're laughing. Had such a great time. I went and did my little guest event. It went really well. I was funny and playful, and everybody signed up because, you know, they felt connected to me because I was a guy. I wasn't some person pontificating, you know, and it didn't matter if they signed up. I had a great time with everybody that was there. And the lady I talked to showed up and we connected again. And it was just wonderful. And so I walked by the front desk and tapped Bambi on the nose and said, hey, bud, at least you're undercover. It's not cold in here. And I got on the elevator. And as soon as I got on the elevator, there's this lady there. I don't know how old she was, maybe early 40s or something. But she looked older because she was all kind of crumpled up. And when I walked on the elevator, you could see that she was a little intimidated, you know. And so I pushed my button for the fourth floor. And I think she pushed the third floor, if I remember right. And the doors closed, and I thought, you know, be playful. So all of a sudden, I spun around right in the middle of the elevator, just shocked her. And I looked at her, and I said, you're probably wondering why I called this meeting with you, aren't you? And she looked at me, and then all of a sudden, she kind of looked shocked. And then I smiled and started to laugh, and then she started to smile and started to laugh. And I said, what's your name? And she said, Betty. And I said, I'm Tony, Betty. And we're going up the elevator. We're not even to the first floor yet. This elevator is the stupidest elevator in the world, right? And I said, well, what you doing here? She said, well, I came here so my children could swim. I said, swim? She goes, yeah, well, it's winter out, so I come here sometimes, and I bring them for a day. I save up my money, And I go shopping a little bit, and I let him swim in the pool. I said, what a great mom you are. I said, that's so awesome. We get to the third floor, and we're about to go, and she says, what floor are you on? I said, I'm on the fourth floor. She said, well, I'll follow you up. I want to finish our conversation. And so we talked for another couple of minutes, and we get to the fourth floor, and I said, what floor are you on? She said, the third floor. I said, you know what? I think I'll walk you to the third floor so we can finish our conversation. We go down to the third floor, and I walk her to her room, and I give her this little kiss on the cheek, and she just beams, and I said, you are an awesome mom. You're amazing. And I said, your kids must absolutely adore you. She goes, well, it's not just my kids. She goes, I got my sister's kids, too. I said, you're amazing. I said, I hope our paths cross again. And I got in the elevator, and I went up, and I went to the presidential suite, and I dove into the shag carpeting, rolled around, and laughed and said, this is the day I got my life back. This is the day when I remember what it's all about. And that's the day that turned my life around, the day I created a code of conduct. And so I changed some of the emotions, but you know what? You got to decide how you're going to be. Decide how you're going to be, and each day when you're doing that OPA, don't write down your to-do list. Write down your outcomes and write down part of your purpose, and some of it is to be a certain way. Think about the roles you're going to play in your life now and really enjoy them. And then if you do that, then I'll know the time we spent here was amazingly valuable, because what it really was about you taking control of your life and you deciding what you want to spend your focus on, your emotion on, your life on. Because time will go by. 10 years will go by in no time. You'll wake up one day and say, where did the time go? And I want to make sure that when you look back on those 10 years, you're filled with the joy of knowing you shaped those 10 years. You shaped that decade. It was your vision that shaped it, not the reaction to the environment. And so I want to thank you. I want to thank you for spending this time with me, and I hope that when you turn off this tape that you'll make your code of conduct. You'll make a list of states and write the word be in front of each of them. Each day I'm committed to being loving, being nice, being playful, being sexy, being fun, being whatever it is you're going to be, and come up with only a number of emotions, 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 12 maximum, that you're willing to look at every day and say, have I been that way? And put it in the front of your book, right next to your driving force. Because if you put yourself in these states every day, I promise you, if you be the best you can be, you'll do what's right. See, I didn't have to think about handing that book to the woman. It wasn't a big deal. I was being who I am. I didn't have to think on the elevator. What should I do? What's my strategy here? What action list should I get? I just spontaneously did what was right. When you're in the right state, you'll do what's right. So make up your list, and thank you. Thank you for giving me 10 days of your life. I've enjoyed it immensely. I hope that for you, this is the beginning of the journey and not the end. I hope for you that I've inspired you to remember what's most important. I hope I've inspired you to decide to get a master's degree in managing your own life. That's really what this is. And boy, I'll tell you what, knowing how to run that life not only effectively but enjoyably is a great gift, isn't it? And hey, you're brand new at it. Be nice to yourself. You use this OPA planner, you take it with you everywhere and start getting things out of your head. Guess what? All that pressure that makes you feel like you have no time, you're going to see a lot of that disappear. And as you increase your capacity, you'll probably increase what you go for in life. And then you'll get stressed again. So you have to get better at it. Increase your capacity again. But this is a never-ending journey. A journey in which you can experience greater results, as I told you in the first tape, and greater fulfillment than you ever dreamed of. All I can hope for is that you'll apply what we've talked about and that you listen to this program again and again so that you let it sink in. And that more importantly than listening to the tapes or listening to me, that you'll go and make this happen, that you'll round out your life, that on a weekly basis, you'll do that hour of power or more than an hour if necessary to really put your life in balance, and that you'll make sure that you're not perfect, but that you're making progress. Because I think achievement is less important than direction. What direction are you heading? Because if you keep heading in the right direction, ultimately you're going to get your dream or something better. A lot of times in my life, I had goals, I had outcomes, and I didn't achieve them. But I kept moving in the right direction, and you know what? It's like our Creator guides us to something even better. If we're willing to trust that, if we're willing to demand from ourselves, if we keep our standards up, if we keep our faith, if we keep our vision, if we keep focusing on what really matters instead of getting caught up in the world. You know, my journey began at 17 years old, sitting in a little room, feeling sorry for myself. And to think that in that one day, my whole life was going to change. You know what did it? Deciding what I really wanted and why I wanted it. Getting a new vision. Getting determined. I heard a song, and the song was an old song by Neil Diamond. It was called I Am, I Said. I remember being in that room feeling bad, feeling sorry for myself, and the song came on, "I Am, I Said," and no one heard, not even the chair. And I looked across at this blank little chair in my little tiny room, and I started to cry, and then something inside me went from just feeling sorry for myself to being determined. I thought, who I am as a man is not showing up. God has put me here on this planet, and I am not demonstrating who I am mentally and emotionally and physically and spiritually. I'm here for a purpose. I've got to do something. I got to figure out how to step up and turn this around. And I tapped into that determination and that faith, and I found my courage, and I went out and figured out how to manage my life. And so today, 20 years later, I can have this conversation with you. I tell you this because I know your life is far from where mine was back then. But the journey I've taken of these 20 years has been an extraordinary one, and the journey of the next 20, 30, or 40 will be even more so. So I thank you for this time, and I thank you for giving that 17-year-old boy a voice. And I hope it's moved you to step up now and make your life the masterpiece it deserves to be. Thank you, and I part with you with a paraphrase of an old quote that I'm sure you remember. Don't follow me, for I am not your leader. And do not lead me, because I will not follow you. But please, walk beside me now and be my friend. I hope to have the chance to meet you someday soon at a seminar or somewhere in the world. Till then, remember the gifts that you've been given. You have all the time there is. Use it well, and each day remember to live with passion. God bless.